Hello everyone, I'm your moderator Amanda Balby with Consultant 360. Influenza season is upon us, and it is the worst season since 2009, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Here with us today to shed some light on this year's flu season is Dr. Angela Campbell, who is a pediatric infectious disease specialist in Atlanta, Georgia, and a medical officer in the CDC's influenza division. Thank you for speaking with us today, Dr. Campbell.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity.
So this flu season is the worst since 2009. Why is that?
You are right. This is a challenging, difficult influenza season. We are experiencing the highest level of outpatient influenza-like illness since the 2009 pandemic. And those numbers are from our surveillance of people seeing healthcare providers for influenza symptoms. And one unusual aspect of this flu season is that we have had several weeks now where most of the country has had widespread influenza activity reported at the same time. In addition, hospitalization rates are very high and increasing. In fact, if the current trend in hospitalization rates continues through the season, it's possible that the number of flu hospitalizations may well exceed the estimated number of hospitalizations that have occurred in any season since the current tracking system began, and that was in 2010. So there are likely many reasons for this intense season, and we are still working to understand them all. One is that influenza A, H3N2 viruses have predominated, and we know from past seasons that when H3N2 viruses predominate, we have seen more severe illness, especially among people older than 65 years and young children. We also know, unfortunately, that for H3N2 viruses, vaccine effectiveness in the past has been relatively low. We are also now seeing an increase in the proportion of influenza B viruses and, to a lesser extent, influenza A H1N1 viruses are circulating. And these viruses are disproportionately causing more severe illness in certain age groups, groups that might not be as affected by the H3N2 viruses. So B viruses in children and young adults and H1N1 viruses in the young and middle-aged adults. So there are a number of factors contributing to this difficult season.
So a study published a few weeks ago suggests that the flu could spread through breathing and not just through bodily fluids. Can you talk more about this? And does this factor into how bad the flu season is this year?
Right. So the recent study you mentioned was conducted at the University of Maryland, and it sought to improve scientific understanding of how flu viruses can spread through droplets of varying sizes produced through exhaled breath, speech, coughing, and sneezing of people who were sick with influenza. There are three potential modes of transmission of influenza viruses. So based on available data, influenza viruses have been thought to spread from person to person primarily through large particle respiratory droplet transmission, such as through droplets that are generated when an infected person coughs or sneezes. This requires close contact between an infected person and a susceptible person because these droplets generally travel only short distances through the air, generally approximately 6 feet or less. So that's one mode of transmission. Another way that influenza viruses can potentially spread is by indirect contact transmission, by touching a surface contaminated with the virus and then touching the nose or mouth or eyes. And then lastly, the published literature also suggests that influenza virus transmission may occur over short distances via near-range inhalation of these extremely small droplets containing the virus that can be suspended in air and inhaled at close range, but aren't likely to remain infectious over long distances. And this study was really looking at that last potential mechanism, the near-range inhalation of extremely small droplets. The study's results suggest that exhaled breath and speech can produce these small droplets that do contain infectious influenza virus. And so the study adds to the evidence that small droplets may play a role in flu transmission. But I should note that influenza viruses in these small droplets appear to travel relatively short distances because the droplets dry out quickly. And airborne transmission of flu viruses over longer distances, such as from one room to another, that has not been documented and it is not thought to occur. So the findings of this study are similar to other studies reported on this topic. And influenza transmission is an area that warrants continued research, but we don't have evidence to suggest that the circulating flu viruses this season are spreading any differently than in past seasons. And this study's findings have not required changes in CDC's guidance on influenza prevention and control. So the core prevention strategies continue to include influenza vaccination, basic preventive actions, including cough etiquette, hand washing, and avoiding close contact with sick people, and in healthcare settings, adherence to infection control precautions. There's been no change to those recommendations.
Do you think in general that influenza is being misdiagnosed in the United States?
I think there is a risk in relying on rapid influenza diagnostic tests, or what we call RIDTs, to diagnose flu. These RIDTs are antigen detection assays. The advantage of them is that they can produce a quick result within 15 minutes. They're simple to perform, and some of them can be used in an outpatient setting without a clinical laboratory. However, it's important to know that these RIDTs can have suboptimal sensitivity, ranging from approximately 50 to 70%. And in addition, the sensitivity to detect influenza B is generally lower than for detection of influenza A viral antigens. Some RIDTs distinguish between influenza A or B viruses, while others do not. But I think the most important thing to remember is that false negative results from RIDTs are common, especially when influenza activity is high, as it has been. So a negative result of an RIDT does not exclude influenza virus infection in patients with signs and symptoms suggestive of flu. And therefore, if it's clinically indicated, if the person is in the recommended group, antiviral treatment should not be withheld from patients with suspected influenza, even if they test negative by RIDT. And further testing of respiratory specimens by molecular assays such as PCR may be needed.
How can healthcare providers recognize influenza versus a standard cold?
That's a great question. It is difficult to distinguish flu from respiratory illnesses caused by other pathogens on the basis of signs and symptoms alone. Typical flu illness generally comes on suddenly with the abrupt onset of fever and cough and other symptoms that might include sore throat, body aches, headache, and fatigue. Among children, otitis media, nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea are also common. Because of the challenges of identifying influenza illness in the absence of laboratory confirmation, the diagnosis of flu just needs to be high on the differential for all patients with respiratory symptoms or fever during flu season. Diagnostic testing doesn't need to be done on all patients with suspected influenza. Once influenza activity has been identified in the community, a clinical diagnosis can be made for outpatients with signs and symptoms consistent with suspected flu. And for individual patients, tests are really most useful when they are likely to yield clinically relevant results that will influence clinical management decisions. So certainly for all hospitalized patients with suspected influenza, testing is recommended and to be performed using RT-PCR or other molecular assays with high sensitivity and specificity.
Absolutely. Thank you again for speaking with me today, Dr. Campbell.
Well, thank you so much for having me.